This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
They say the best things in life are free. The good life. It feel like Atlanta. It feel like LA. It feel like Miami. It feel like NY. Summertime shy. So I roll through good. Y'all pop the trunk. I pop the hood. Ferrari. And she got the goods. And she got that ass. I got to look.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Zero, coming to you live here this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, of course, wasting no time bringing in my PIC, Mr. Scotland Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 485 of the longest running gold motherfucking standard Place to Be podcast.
It's fitting that we're on. I was going to say it's fitting that we're on 485 because I think that's where you had AJ Styles ranked, I believe, on your greatest WWE wrestler.
Well, no, I mean 485 is for people that have worked longer than 18 months. Okay.
385 right? Spots below Coco Beware.
Below Coco Beware, right? And I mean, and SD Jones would give AJ a much better match than like, you know, fucking Randy Orton or fucking Nakamura or something. I've tried to prove that, Jesus Christ. But anyway,
sometimes you're just going to take the L, my friend. Sometimes you're just going to take the L.
You know. It's called subjective. If you'd like, I can copy and paste when you finish your tag teams, and I'll just do that.
Well, I'm not saying you had them by exact list. I just think AJ Styles should be on the list.
I'll make sure to have the Twin Towers at like 5. Will that
especially
make
when you have when you had Asuka and Terry Funk and everyone else who had like less than a year and you have.
Well, no, I had a damn good argument about Asuka. Asuka was very different than I had a damn. Listen to the shows and you'll understand. Asuka was a very different argument than and Charlotte. Very different argument. But anyway, JR, are you stretching your legs out so when you and Cowboy D'Amato get in the fucking in the clown car?
We're ready to go. Ready to go coming Thursday. So yeah, I guess we'll talk about it real quick now. WrestleMania weekend is upon us. Just found out Nick Duke is going to make it now, so we're excited about that. Last minute edition.
Oh, boy, those bar tabs will be through the fucking roof. I'm sure those bars can't wait for him.
He's paying his own way.
Be great.
If you're attending in New Orleans, you want to get together with the, I think we're 25 to 30 people, I think, at this point. We're having a very large gathering before WrestleMania on Sunday. And we've actually made an agreement with a pub, Cajun's Pub. It's a karaoke, 24-hour karaoke bar. We're actually starting at 9:30 a.m. And we will be there. We have the patio to ourselves. We're going to have some food. They'll let us use their grills. We're going to be grilling up. And it's a cheap buy-in, and you get that, and then we'll have the bar right there. We'll have some karaoke and a lot of cool people, so be sure to...
They're letting you grill there? Really?
I guess they have grills outside, and they're actually providing, like, side dishes for us as a part of the buy-in.
Wow, you guys, like, talk to all these and they're not in the accents? Yeah, you can come on the back with our Creole boys.
Yeah,
with the red beans and rice. Wow, so, I'm
looking
impressed.
Forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Very good.
Pumped.
Excellent.
Weather looks nice, so should be a lot of fun. It's going to be a big weekend. So if you're interested, if you're going to be there and you want to join, just reach out to us on social media over the next few days, and we'll get you hooked up. There's also rumors of a Graham Coffin appearance at the gathering, so we'll see.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
He's hoping to make it by. Last year, we had Brad Stutz. This year, Graham Coffin. Next year, Anthony Armento. Diminishing returns.
Yeah, and you want to, and you don't want to fall asleep on either. You want none of them falling asleep on you. So.
No, definitely. Armento may never wake up.
Well, that's true. Well, yeah, and then we'd have to book our own wake. Oh, God. Well, as long as we took notes a few years ago, we'll all be fine. All right. Anyway, let's talk about things anew, JR. Let's not talk about old things. Let's talk about new, fresh things, like a new year.
Mm-hmm.
1988, sir.
Yeah.
We have kicked the door in. So our first official show of the new year, 1988. And to do that, why don't we bring in the third member of our triad this evening?
All right. You've heard him a couple times here on the Place to Be podcast. Once for a Vintage Vault. Here's his second twist around. Of course, that is the man behind the mic. Greetings from Allentown, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network here at PlayStation.com. The one and only Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great. It was heaven in 87, but it's going to be great in 88. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I was going with that, but
right down the fucking promo. Chair. That's where you're going.
Yeah, I think I was going for Shaska Watley on that one, and just came up a little bit short.
Yeah, very short.
Yes, excellent. Do you have a top hat and a bow tie and nothing else?
Oh my god! Episode 42 of Greetings from Allentown. Check the archives for the Pez Watley heel turn. It's so amazing. And my theories of brainwashing and black ops and all that stuff.
Oh, fantastic!
Episode 42. Check it out. So it's been a while, as the song goes. It's been a while since we've last chatted, Scott. It's been about 3 weeks,
yes.
Right? And I had some work trip, and I also had a weekend stop in Vegas last weekend. And I'm going to tell one quick tale. It's a quick one. So on Friday night, it had been like a long couple days, right? A long time. My wife had come in. She arrived. She was kind of running on empty. We went to a nice Brazilian steakhouse with Josh Richer and his fiance. So that was delicious.
Oh, very nice.
And so we're getting back to the hotel. We stayed at the Excalibur. And I was, like, super confident our room was 13,275. So we're walking down the hall, and I'm like, well, I must be wrong. It must have been 13,175. So we're walking down the hall because I don't see any twos. And as we're walking, this guy is, like, really close behind us. It's a bigger guy, kind of scraggly hair, a beard. And, like, he's, like, tailing us down the hallway. And our room is at the very end of the hallway, the very end. So I'm like, this guy... Like, there's no other room with us. It was, like, us and then, like, the stairs or whatever. And so as we're going further down the stairs, and keep in mind, I've been watching Breaking Bad lately, so my mind is very paranoid as it is right now. So I'm going down the hallway, and all I'm thinking is this motherfucker going to, like, try and kick his way in our room or something? So I'm, like, gearing up. Like, I have kind of my fist clenched. I don't know what the fuck. I had something in my hand that was kind of just getting ready, thinking, like, I'm going to get ready. If he turns like he's coming in our room, I'm just going to turn and punch him in the face, right? So I'm gearing up, and my wife's kind of eyeing me, and I keep glancing back at him, and I'm like, I do not need to get in a fight in fucking Vegas. Is this guy really trying to jump us in the hotel? So we get to the end of the hallway, and he follows us all the way to the end of the hall. And I go to open the door, and he is standing behind me. And I'm like, fuck, here we go. I go to do the key. It's red. He goes, hey, that's my room. We were in the wrong tower. So we had to go all the way fucking back down the hallway, and we were on the tower across the other side of the hotel.
Wait a minute. You don't keep a foreign object on you at all times?
I should. I was regretting. Usually I have my keys or something. You know, like I'm ready to go.
You should have pulled like the thing like Savage does out of his tights, you know, like the taped up knucks or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I was ready to throw down. Glad I didn't have to, though. He was probably like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Go to my goddamn room. So anyway.
He's on his own podcast right now retelling the outside of the tale.
He's like, this motherfucking guy was trying to get in my room. What the hell? So anyway.
I thought you were going to tell me, I thought you were going to do like a customer service pit boss story, you know. So this guy, you know, he wasn't listening to me. I asked for his supervisor, and then Big Lou came out and shook me down that I wanted the Cardinals.
The customer service wasn't bad, actually. We had a pretty good trip.
I've never stayed at the Excalibur.
It's not bad.
Still nice?
It's not a bad place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the older hotels.
I mean, my mantra in Vegas is you're not going to be in the room. So, like, unless you're springing for, like, a fucking suite or something, just go with the best deal and spend your time and money elsewhere. That's how I feel, anyway. You feel the
same
way?
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. 100%. It's a bed. That's all it is. Really.
Right.
Although, yeah. When I stayed at the Excalibur in 2009, I did that slip the 20 with your credit card bit so I could get one of the rooms with the bigger TV.
Wow.
I don't know why that was so important to me.
Right. Why would you want a bigger TV? Were you in the room watching TV that much?
Yeah, really.
Well, I don't know what the hell would have been on. I remember watching a Denver-San Francisco preseason game.
You know, there's a NASA sports book in every casino that you could have watched that
game.
Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, I know, but I would rather be by myself.
Yeah, who knows, Mr. Winston? Our team may be playing some games in Vegas in June. Never know.
Nice.
Very nice.
It'd be nice.
More on them later, actually. So JR, I'm glad you didn't get your ass kicked for
Oh, that guy had no chance. I would have beaten the shit out of him. But yes, it's I'm glad I didn't, and you're not get arrested for assault for no reason, so that's good. I waited.
Maybe he's the co-owner of that pizza joint that that your wife
you may have been fucking tracking me down to Vegas to get his money.
Your fucking wife still loves for this pizza.
You remember me, Anthony Albertino?
Oh, shit. All right. So, anyway, yeah. Why don't we...
Might have been doing this podcast in? From fucking San Quentin. I wouldn't have been back there.
Clank, clank. Nails will be there. Vince still owes me money. All right. So as we mentioned, it is our first show of the calendar year 1988. It is, because Mr. Winston's here, of course, it is a Saturday night's main event.
Mm-hmm.
It was taped on December 7th, 1987, and aired live on NBC on January 2nd, 1988. Now, live on this evening, there were two house shows going on, so the roster was only split in half. The first one, and both venues actually kind of very coincidental to the people on this program and the theme of our program, because one of the house shows was at the Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, which, of course, we may be heading there very soon.
Dun, dun, dun.
Another month from now, perhaps. All right, here was your card. Lanny Poffo defeated Barry Horowitz. The Killer Bees over the Conquistadors. Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Rick Rude, a 20-minute draw.
Hmm.
For Rude at that time. Heart Foundation defeated Strike Force by DQ when Tito hit Brett with Jimmy Hart's megaphone. Hulk Hogan pinned the one-man gang to retain his world title. Jumping Bomb Angels, listen to this team, guys, defeated Sensational Sherry and Rockin' Robin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Robin working a little heel action. Huh? Interesting. Robin was pinned, of course, as she should have.
Two great singers.
Yeah. Bruce yeah. Yes, she now does the national anthem at the Golden Knights games. Bruce Beefcake pinned Greg Valentine. And in the main event, Honky defeated Randy Savage by DQ after Savage rammed Honky and Jimmy Hart's heads together. The other half of the roster was, gentlemen, at a place both of you know very well. The Centrum in Worcester.
Woohoo!
Wonderful, that wonderful pit. Here is your card. Dino Bravo pinned SD Jones. Sam Houston defeated Danny Davis via DQ. Ken Patera and Billy Jack Haynes defeated Demolition by DQ. The Rock Don Morocco pinned Butch Reed. The Islanders defeated the Young Stallions. Ted DiBiase pinned Jake Roberts. Hercules fought Coco Beware to a draw. And in the main event, Bam Bam Bigelow pinned King Kong Bundy. So that's where the roster was on this evening. Before we get to the nitty-gritty, JR, quick check of the dark matches on this evening at the Cap Center. Dino Bravo pinned Hillbilly Jim. The Islanders defeated the British Bulldogs. Rick Rude pinned the JYD after the bout. JYD challenged Rude to an immediate rematch. And, of course, the JYD won because he needed his heat back, of course.
Yeah, we needed two of those, that's for sure.
Yeah. The King Harley Race pinned Jim Duggan after hitting him with a foreign object. The Ultimate Warrior pinned Iron Mike Sharp. And Randy Savage defeated Honky Tonk Man by DQ in a lumberjack match after the Islanders interfered. So there was your dark matches on the Cap Center on this evening.
Okay.
JR, any tidbits before we start?
No. We're getting right into things.
Look at that. Clean and clean. Let's dive in. Who's our announcers? Our usuals, of course.
It is Jesse Ventura and Vince McMahon. Of course, opening up this final home stretch to WrestleMania now from here through March. We kick off with promos from Jake the Snake, Greg Valentine, Strike Force, Slick and the Bolsheviks, Bobby Heenan, King Kong Bundy, Andre the Giant, and Hulk Hogan. And then we go to Vince and Jesse wishing us a happy new year, setting the stage for what's to come tonight. We go backstage with Mean Gene's with the Hulkster, who's doing Hindu squats, says he's in shape to do a bunch of crazy shit and then destroy Bundamania and get his hands on Andre. Gene's then with the Bolsheviks and Slick, who are ready to take the tag belts tonight. They are peace-loving and all about good sportsmanship and citizenship. Slick says Gorbachev came to D.C. last month to talk strategy, not just meet with the president. Slick is fantastic here. I thought he was great during this whole promo.
He absolutely was. Absolutely was.
And it's also good timing, if any of you watch The Americans, because we're right around this time, I believe, was the summit with Gorbachev coming to the U.S. So, timing. Mm-hmm. You watch that, Peter? No? Yes?
I don't watch that show, but they signed the INF treaty at that summit, so.
We should
yes, they did.
Gene!
Is this the last?
Huh?
Is this the last season?
Yeah, this is it.
Okay, I'll definitely watch it when it's over.
As Kenny Loggins once said, this is it.
Of course.
That was a Gene favorite of mine. It didn't mean as much to me until I became a Yacht Rock aficionado. But he said that quite a bit, didn't
yes.
he? Yes. I feel like he said it a lot. Anyway, Gene talks to Strike Force after we see footage of their title win. They are proud of their title reign and are going to make 1988 their year as they strike hard and with force. They know the Russians are big and strong, but they have heart and the world behind them. So, very confident that they have the world behind them. And that brings us to our opener. WWF Tag Team Titles on the line in a best of three falls match. Strikeforce taking on those pesky Bolsheviks. Kicking off 88 with a best of three tag defense with an interesting team that really hasn't won much to get this title shot. Slick gets in the ring and the Russians open up as Nikolai sings the anthem to booze as usual. Strikeforce jogs out to girls in cars and the crowd is all fired up. Jesse makes Sylvester Stallone height jokes. Excuse me. So Strikeforce won't be able to pull hair like usual tonight. Tito and Boris open up, and the Russian uses some power early, but Tito outquicks him and batters him around before going to the arm. Strikeforce quick tags and keeps pounding away as Jesse says they'll slow things down. Nikolai tags in, but Martel is all over him, getting two on a roll-up. Nikolai keeps trying to slug away, but Martel keeps sneaking in pin attempts. Boris then returns, and Martel fights him off and tags Tito, who gets a 2-1 across body as Vince mocks Boris's big head. Things break down. It ends with Nikolai working over Tito with some power offense. The Russians take turn hammering away and wearing down Tito with a chin lock. He wriggles free and tags Martel, who's all over Boris with a big flurry, and the crowd is rocking here. Martel gets the Boston Crab, and Tito fends off Nikolai, and the champs win the first fall. After the break, Strikeforce is still in control. Martel goes back to the Crab, but Nikolai makes a save. He hotshots Martel and gets to work, grabbing some near falls with his power move, showing off his strength. Jesse talks about the Russians being in a desperation situation as they continue to double-team and tag in and out. Martel gets a near fall on a sunset flip, and he and Nikolai collide hard in the ring. Tito makes a tag, but things break down into a big brawl. Boris grabs Slick's cane, but that backfires, and he cracks Nikolai by accident, and Tito covers to get the second fall and the win. I thought this was fine, and I like that Saturday Night's Main Event has kind of become the best-of-three tag fall, like best-of-three-fall tag kind of thing. This is a second or third time they've done it now. I thought Strikeforce looked good, but they can only do so much. Boris is just fucking terrible. I mean, Nikolai's trying to carry this, but he's limited as well. And I like that it was two straight falls. We don't need Strikeforce giving up pins to the fucking Bolsheviks at this point. So I was perfectly fine with the quick sweep. I went 2 stars in this, Scott. What do you think?
I gave it 2 stars as well. It was fine. Nothing offensive. Bolsheviks, solid team just to put on TV. It's funny that, in this stretch, I'm curious your thoughts on this too, Peter. It's a weird stretch. Like, you don't see Strikeforce a lot. It's very odd. Like, we don't get a boatload of national matches with them. I'm curious to see if we get any when we hit the couple of our garden shows, if we see them. But I feel like we never watched a lot of Strikeforce. Like, they, when they were trying to figure out how to, what to do after Zenk left, and we saw the single stuff in, July, June, July, August, into the fall. And then finally by September, they come together. And then out of the blue, they win the tag titles. We see them at Survivor Series. And now here they are here. Like, it seemed like we didn't see them a lot in this stretch. And it was good. And I agree with you completely, JR, on the whole not needing to eat a pin. Because I think the fans needed to see this team. I think they hadn't really gotten accustomed to seeing them on a national level, other than Survivor Series, if you got the pay-per-view at the time. Because the tape didn't come out for like another fucking month, I think. If you wanted to spend $50, or hopefully your video store had it. And they were kind of off the radar to a certain extent. So I felt this was a big match for Strikeforce, not just to win, but to actually look good. And obviously we know Tito and Martel are exceptional workers. But no one had seen them. I feel like no one really on a national stage had seen them together. And now here they are, the tag team champions. So this was a big match for them, bigger than it may seem. It's just a random opener. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, Zukov. I mean, he had some moderate usefulness in AWA, but really he's nothing much. And you're right. When you've got to carry when Nikolai's got to do the carrying, you're fucked. but a solid enough match, Peter. 2 stars for me. Good defense for Strikeforce.
Every time I see Martel out there, I always get mad at how they kind of shit on him a little bit by saying the whole Martel is too small and all that. Like, he can't get these guys in the Boston Crab. And then he just does, but they don't really remark on that. I think that they we're going to put the tag titles on them. And then for whatever reason, they stunted them. I mean, they beat them at Survivor Series. They're mm-hmm. Out in the middle of the match. I don't quite understand what's going on there. I'm going to blame it on Girls in Cars for stunting what could have potentially been a great thing, because the song is a little hokey. And you know me, I like my Pile Driver album, but I don't think that was the best for them. One thing you may not know about Boris Zukov and his hat that he is wearing here, He bought it from Bob Sacamano's guy down at Battery Park, $40.
So did it fall apart on the way to the ring?
Made it through a couple more house shows, but you know, with those 87, 88 WWF checks, Boris could shell out the $40 more often. I think the Bolsheviks made sense as an opponent here because, you know, they're new enough and they're new enough. I mean, they're not losing a ton. I think probably this is an edict from NBC, like, we want the Soviets, damn it, on here so that we can do the pun stuff at the beginning. But like you said, there's nothing that Zhukov can do. But I will remark that this is a good match from the perspective of it is so quintessential pro wrestling that you have on one side a Mexican guy who's really from New Jersey, a Canadian guy who a year later would be billed from Florida, going against a Croatian who is playing a Russian, and a guy from Virginia who is playing a Russian, and they're managed by a capitalist pimp. So I don't think it gets any better than that. I know you mentioned the 2 out of 3 falls and that kind of being a staple of the Saturday Night's Main Event. I don't think they really need to do that here because a little bit of Nikolai and Boris goes a long way. That's what my grandpa always said. I love how he kept calling Boris an idiot. Like Vince, he kind of did look stupid when the tag there. So there's really no need for 2 falls. I don't think it always just kind of every time I see a match that goes 2-0 and a 2 out of 3 falls, I just start thinking of all the other matches in history that went 2 straight falls. And I think you might be seeing one soon. I only gave it 1.5 stars, which I'm shocked that I'm the low vote on this because I love Rick Martel. He's a great hot tag, but it didn't do it for me.
I thought they were pretty good in this match. I mean, they clearly carry things. And I don't mind when there's 2 straight because it at least adds some intrigue to when it's not 2 straight. It's like, I mean, it feels like for a long time I was always like, well, if it's best of 3, it's going 3. And I like when they mix in the 2 straight to at least add a little variance to everything. Especially in a situation like this. The Bolsheviks, they do not need to get pins, so it's fine.
It always reminds me of the time that Dolph Ziggler beat Cesaro 2 falls to none at the 2014 Hell in a Cell, and then I just become enraged. So that might actually come out in some of my ratings later, because that I was in a bad mood because I started thinking about that.
I mean, you could have gave me like a million tries, and I don't think I would have guessed that that match happened at that show. So see, didn't really leave much of an effect on me.
I made the note on that.
I always think of the was it Austin and Dustin Rhodes? This is Starrcade 93. They go 2 straight as well. That's not the one the lights
go
out.
Yes, it is Starrcade 93. Yep.
So there you go. All right. Gene's backstage with Mr. Fuji and Sika. Fuji has a giant tub of mustard, and Sika has a massive sub roll. Fuji says Damien will be Sika's dinner, so he's going to eat a snake sandwich. Sounds tasty. Gene's then with Jake, who isn't concerned with Fuji's comments in the least. Jake respects Sika, but Sika must respect the DDT, and he'll have to be more tactical in his approach here tonight. And that does bring us to this very random match, as Jake the Snake Roberts battles Sika. Jake is kind of a man without a feud right now. still really over, but has he had anything going on since he had the honky stuff, then he got hurt, he came back, and he hasn't really done much since returning of note.
Well, it's been so inconsistent because he was, you know, he was gone for a while and then came back briefly and then left again, and he hadn't really gotten his footing yet, you know, over the last probably, 3 months. So probably a good start for him now.
Just chilling. Sika's just bottom-tier feeder at this point, but enough of a name to be dangerous in these spots. Jake works the arm as Jesse thinks Jake's trying to wrestle Sika. Would be a smart approach. Jake ducks and punches and works the arm before burying a shoulder to the ribs. Sika comes back with a high back body drop and starts to rake and choke and kick away. Fuji lands a cane shot as Jesse talks about how Fuji's presence makes Sika very dangerous. Sika works a nerve hold, but eventually drops his head, and that allows Jake to make a comeback with some punches. Fuji hooks Jake's leg, but Snake dodges a charge in the corner and rolls up Sika for the win. Jesse bitches about a fast count as Sika gets dumped to the floor. Jake corners Fuji and drops him with a DDT to a huge pop. Jesse's concerned with Fuji's hat getting destroyed in the move, and then bitches about managers getting abused as Jake unleashes Damien on Fuji. Vince calls him Fat Bulbous as Sika makes a save. Vince is all fired up.
I think he calls him a walrus. I think it's walrus.
No, yep. He said Bulbous. I thought he said Bulbous. He always says Bulbous.
No, it was walrus. Yep. Get that fat walrus out of the ring. Yeah, it was walrus.
Either way, it both describe Fuji very well. nothing match here. Meandering offense. Jake needs something better, and I like the post-match quite a bit. The crowd ate it up, so I gave it a little slight bump. I went a star because I thought Jake was pretty good, and I like the post-match. Sika belongs to Boris in the ship out to the territories line very soon. But anyway, that's what I got. What do you got, Peter?
Well, Sika is the consummate savage, as pointed out before. Again, I'm going to go back to the well again with the joke from last time. I'm really tired of Roman Reigns' dad being shoved down America's throats here.
I'm getting tired of the joke being shoved down our throat.
I did say I was in a bad mood, but then I completely forgot about the Fuji promo, which was magnificent. But I knew I wanted a little bit more out of Fuji. What kind of mustard was it? Because it was a plain jar that just said mustard. So I wrote down, was it yellow? Was it spicy brown? It looked to be a Dijon with the way.
Yeah, it wasn't like bright Frenchy. It was definitely like a little Grey Poupon action going on, I think.
I think so,
yeah. I don't think Grey Poupon isn't sold in jugs like that. I think it was like a honey mustard.
That's possible, too. I mean,
I don't think there's ever a jar that actually just says mustard.
Yeah, look, Kramer mustard. Bought it with the oh, yes. God, I just drew a blank. What are the SpaghettiOs he buys? Peter, save me.
I can't remember.
What the fuck are they? Oh, God. Why am I drawing a blank? Beefarino.
Oh,
Beefarino.
That he feeds
fit
the horse.
For King or Queeno.
Yeah.
Jake wrestled kind of smartly. It showed kind of the logic and psychology that he always does, kind of moving around and, you know, trying to outquick Sika, I guess it would be. I don't know what was more gross, the nerve hold or the giant drool that was coming out of Sika's mouth as he was doing it.
Vince had to point out, too.
It was a decent visual, but it was completely disgusting. Kind of a weak finish with the SD Jones Memorial Charge by Sika, but I guess it's sensible in that Jake was trying to sort of avoid him and just, you know, get the hell out of there so he could get thee to a feud at some point. But Jesse's concern for Fuji's hat is amazing. He's more concerned about the hat than anything else. And the fact that it did stay on in the post-match is hysterical and made me wonder if he had it stapled to his hair. I give it 1 star, but mainly for Fuji's hat.
He's a Lindsay Olives, Jerry.
I gave it a star. I mean, it was all right. Served its purpose again. Sika's a fine hand when need be. But yeah, Jake, right now, now that we're getting to the new year, you know, this kind of cleans up the end of 87 in that aspect, and now it's time for Jake to kind of set himself up for, you know, for the next few months. So curious to see who he jumps in with. But, you know, Jake was always known for the whole, like, smacking his shoulder when he does his punches for added effect, and he was almost, like, off time. Like, he smacked his shoulder, like, a good 2 seconds before he actually threw the punch, which I thought was pretty funny. I did think it was odd that he won with the roll-up and actually didn't hit the DDT on Sika. I mean, conceivably,
it's
he
smart.
Could have,
you know, Sika's hard head. Can't DDT him.
Yes, you can't. You can't take consummate warriors or whatever consummate animals or the hell he was. Yeah, very interesting. But I mean, decent enough match. TV, fine TV fare, and Jake moves on. So good filler before we get to what we have coming up.
And that was Scott's number 87, greatest wrestler ever, Sika.
Sika, that's right. He'll be on the tag team list too, and higher than 87.
Probably.
Somewhere.
Alright, so we'll go to break.
Yes, we will. Why don't we take a breather? Interesting here that our main event was not second or first, because usually they try and get the hot stuff out of the way early. But coming up after the break, we will have two more matches, including our big main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, the big rematch from our last program. But first, let's take a break, because...
What you all right. They'll never be, you'll never find. No. You will never find another lover like me. No. You
will never find another lover like me. Promotional consideration paid for by the following...
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is the king of old school, Steve Carino, the true voice of Ring of Honor, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Nation, we're back here talking January 1988, Saturday's Main Event, to myself, Scott Criscolo, Peter Winston, visiting us from Allentown. It's always good to have him in the building. And I'll tell you, Peter, the first time you came on back at Halloween, it kind of meant something to me. It was like kind of a little emotional. I got so emotional that you joined us for that show, and now here we are, best of friends.
Even though I screwed up the bit?
Yeah, you really
did. I really can't stop thinking about how bad I bollocks the bit and then just steamrolled. Like, I'm like, all right, I got to get my shit in. Like, bo-bo-bo-bo-bo-bo. I was basically like the world's worst indie wrestler.
Get all the moves in.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
You know who else is getting so emotional? That's the song that's underneath us right now. Yes. Look, he stomped right over my fucking intro, too. I maybe completely lose a train of thought, but. Whatever. Here's Scott, pop culture.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. You are hearing the beautiful tones of one Whitney Houston. She was the number two song this week because for yet another week, George Michael's Faith was your number one song in the country. But since we played that on the last episode, we decided to change things up. So the number two song this week, which came out on this day, January 2nd, 1988, the new Billboard Top 100 or Top 40. Faith, once again, number one, and number two is, as you're listening, Whitney's So Emotional. Number three is This Love by Whitesnake. And number four, the first George Harrison single in many, many years, at number four with Got My Mind Set on You. Peter Winston's theme song, Shake Your Love by Debbie Gibson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Get down, damn it.
Yeah. Another hot little hot mama here, a little Jody Watley action with Don't You Want Me? Oh, this is like Peter's greatest hits right here. Yes, this was his valet, Shaska's valet, Jody. At number seven, Little Michael with The Way You Make Me Feel. Number eight, Pretty Poison with Catch Me, I'm Falling. Remember that song, Peter?
No, catch I can't me, say I'm I can't falling. Say that I do.
Catch me now. Do you know it now with that great rendition, Peter?
Yeah, with that rendition, that's all you need to know. Because the real version sucks.
If you don't know it now, you'll never get it.
You never know it. At number nine, Cherry Bomb by John Mellencamp. And at number 10, Need You Tonight by INXS. There's your top 10. So once again, George Michael, Faith was number one. And the song you just heard, little Whitney Houston's So Emotional, was number two.
I have faith that we're going to get better songs next week.
Yes, I believe so too. And some movies, because we have no movies tonight, JR. So.
Oh. No. Open up Wikipedia for nothing.
I know. Sorry, Peter. You'll have to come back when we have some hot 88 cinema. So, all right. Now, the NFL play, of course, our season. So, JR, why don't you just remind us once again of the standings, just to give everyone an idea, for those who missed it. The standings of the 1987 regular season, of course, the final tallies. You, of course, won. Mr. Kelly Nelson finished, what, two or three games behind? And yes!
Hang on, because ironically, as you may know, the theme song to Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly Nelson was We Are the Champions. Mm-hmm. But he was a fucking loser when it came to this, because he only got 44 and I got 47. So suck it. Pete Schermacher got 11, and then Peter wins a good 8.
Eight. You even lost to Pete.
And I submitted picks every single week. And I
went to Scott's spam box. That was a problem.
It went to the spam box. Sorry, Peter. You're unfamiliar in the management hierarchy chain here in the IT. Well, let's talk to IT about that. Anyway, the following day was the wild card weekend. Now, back in those days, there was only two wild card games. One of them at the Superdome in New Orleans, where, JR, you will be Sunday. The Saints got blown out 44-10 by the Vikings. They would head to San Francisco the following week. And in overtime at the Astrodome, the Oilers defeated the Seattle Seahawks 23-20. The Oilers would head to Denver the following week for the divisional playoff against the Broncos. The other two games the following week, the Colts were in Cleveland. Yes, back when Cleveland actually was in the playoffs. And the Redskins were in Chicago to take on the Bears. So those were the divisional playoff games, and we'll on our next show, we'll see where we are in the postseason. The college football season ended the day before. Congratulations to Mr. Dennis Erickson. Jimmy Johnson and his last national championship with the Miami Hurricanes. They defeated Oklahoma 20-14 in the Orange Bowl to win the national championship. So
sorry, Jim Ross.
Loser.
Yeah. Loser. So there you go. So
Kelly Nelson. Jim Ross and Kelly Nelson. Two big
Jim
losers.
Ross and Kelly Nelson, yes. Okay. And let us go now to a little NBA action, what teams played on that day in the National Basketball Association. It was a full slate of games, 9 games. Your Boston Celtics, gentlemen, won on the road, 115-110 over the Warriors, the great one, or the basketball Jesus, as Bill Simmons calls him, of course, Larry Bird, 41 points for the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Was he the high scorer of the evening? Let's see. Well, Isaiah had 40, but we don't like him. And they lost. They lost to the Nuggets. Let's see, 22, 36, 35. Yep, Larry was the high scorer that night with 41. The Celtics leading the Atlantic at 18-9. The Hawks lead the Central at 20-7. The Mavs lead the Midwest at 18-8. And the Lakers lead the Pacific at 20-6.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Owen Hart fielded his own team? Oh, you mean the Denver Nuggets. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. What a great team that would be, too. The college basketball poll that came out, that would be coming out, that was out already, your top 10, Arizona, Kentucky, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Wyoming, Temple, Syracuse, Florida, Duke, and Oklahoma.
Who the fuck was on the Wyoming?
Wyoming, yeah.
Wyoming, yeah. Was that Finis Dembo who ended up getting drafted, I think, by the Nets?
Sounds like a guy that would be drafted by the Nets.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, on the frozen pond of the National Hockey League, 9 games also on the docket. And as we discussed, Mr. Winston, the Caps were actually playing live on this evening at the Cap Center. and they shut the Oilers out 2-0. Yes. Our Boston Bruins gentlemen were home on this evening, 5-1 winners over the Quebec Nordiques. Mr. Winston, want to take a guess who scored the 5 goals?
Okay, 87-88. I'm going to go with Ken Linsman.
He had 2 goals.
Oh. Ray Bourque?
No, the greatest defenseman of our generation did not score a goal that evening.
Cam Neely?
Of course, the great Cam Neely had a goal. So two goals left, one by 2 different guys.
Keith Crowder?
Keith Crowder did not have a goal. The other two were scored by Nifty himself, Rick Middleton.
Uh-huh.
And Randy Burridge.
Oh, nice. The stump.
Love Randy Burridge. Yeah, I love Randy Burridge. The Whale, we do have a soft spot for the Whalers here, Peter. They tied the Devils 1-1 at the Civic Center.
Mr. Ties.
Yes, exactly. Mr. D'Amato's Rangers, 5-3 winners over the North Stars. Let's see, Pete's a Blues fan, right? Yes. His Blues and Mr. Nelson's Flames played each other on this evening.
Oh, boy.
And,
let me guess, Kelly lost.
Of course he did.
Loser!
The Blues won 5-3. The Red Wings were leading... Loser. Red Wings were leading the Norris. Flames were still leading the Smythe. The piece of trash Canadians, Mr. Winston, leading the Bruins by 3 because they suck ass. And the Islanders and Flyers were tied in the Patrick. Remember when the divisions were like had cool names?
As God intended.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should go back to that. And that is your pop culture report.
Hey, Kelly
back
Nelson.
To the,
Loser! I'm gonna sing Deacon. I'm gonna sing Deacon Blues to Pete on Sunday at karaoke.
Deacon Blues.
Hey, you lay off Lanny McDonald because at the 2011 Stanley Cup Final Game 4, after the game, I peed in a urinal adjacent to Lanny McDonald in his mustache. So it's one of my proudest moments as a fan.
That is tremendous. Of course, yeah. We owned the piece of shit Canucks in Game 4. So yes, that's a. That's actually a pretty damn good moment.
What game did we watch at the Gentleman's Establishment, Scott? Was that game 2?
Game 2. When we lost. Remember that? Ugh. Ugh, should have won that fucking game.
We lost the game and then
yes,
we lost Andrew Flanagan inside the club.
Yes, and Rotella. We lost a few people. All right, back to the Cap Center.
Okay. Mean Jeans with King Kong Bundy, Bobby Heenan, Andre the Giant, as Heenan reaffirms he will not be at ringside tonight because Andre will be the official manager for this match only. Bobby says that his doctor's orders due to his neck and that Bundy will end Hulkamania. Gene is with Hulk Hogan again, who talks about the dark cloud over his 1986 hockey in the brain, dark cloud. Cloud over his 1987, and some Hulkamaniacs are worried. He talks about meeting a jacked up Ronald Reagan and says that the summit meeting was all he needed here in D.C. to end Bundamania and get his hands on the Giant. And that is our next match, the big rematch from November, King Kong Bundy battling Hulk Hogan. This has been pretty well hyped and built since that last outing and go around here. Bundy and Andre stalk to the ring to booze, and their presence is great. Hogan power walks out to his usual huge pop, and we get settled in for this one. Jesse says Hogan will be focusing on Andre instead of King Kong Bundy, and that could mean trouble. We start with a lockup, and Hogan dodges an avalanche and shoots Bundy from corner to corner and pelts him with a big boot that drives the challenger to the floor. Andre comes over to confer, and that doesn't go great as Bundy returns and then gets driven right back outside. Bundy comes in again, and Hogan unloads on him, starting to work the wrist and arm, and Bundy turns the tide with a hair pull and now grabs the arm and works that for a bit. Hogan punches free and slams Bundy in a great spot, but Bundy dodges an elbow, and Hogan slows him down. Bundy works in some punches and a slam, but now he misses a pair of elbow drops. Hogan fires up, drills Bundy with a clothesline to the corner. Bundy reverses a whip and shoots Hogan to the corner and avalanches both Hulk and the ref. Bundy misses a splash, and Hogan empties the tank with punches and elbows, knocking the challenger to the floor. Andre checks on Bundy as we get a new referee, and after the break, the old ref actually gets stretchered out, and the match restarts. Bundy gets back inside and gains control, dropping some heavy knees to the chest and then chopping the champ to the floor. Hogan climbs back in, but Bundy's relentless, hammering away and getting a near fall before going to a chin lock. Bundy releases and then hits 2 avalanches in the corner and then stands next to Hogan with their feet touching. And he demands a 5 count. Jesse just says it should be a legal pin since their feet were touching. We'll talk about this in a minute. Bundy drops a splash, but Hogan kicks out and fires up, unloading on Bundy and finishing him with the leg drop in short order. Jesse's just livid about the missed pinfall as Andre comes to the ring and backs off before sneaking back in again and jumping the champ from behind, rattling with headbutts and a giant choke. The Bulldogs show up to help, but Andre wipes them out too, and then the locker room empties and eventually save the champ. This was fine. It was about the same as November. Effective and crisp in the back end. Sluggish early on. Once they got into a groove, though, it picked up. Andre's at ringside. It was a fun angle on this. The post-match attack was real good and really well done. Adds a lot of heat to the issue. And a good final salvo and late-run bump for King Kong Bundy, who I believe we don't see again for a while, Scott. I think this is it for him. So I gave this 2.5, same grade as November. Talk about the match, Scott, and then we'll talk about Bundy. And also, what are your thoughts on Jesse's? I thought it was absurd. Like, I'm usually with Jesse, like, 99% of the time he's right. But that was, like, it was just way over the top. It almost hurts his credibility when he does shit like that. Because usually he's so accurate, even when he's going for the heels, that felt, like, ham-fisted.
Yeah, the whole his foot's there kind of thing. Yeah, right. that was nonsense.
Their feet are touching! His shoulders are down!
I mean, if he had just said it, like, in half, elbow to the ribs, haha, yeah, his foot was there. But he legitimately made as if the fucking ref blew it, and he really didn't. Right. So it did hurt a little bit. I gave the match 2.5. I gave the match in November 2.5 as well. Bundy and Hogan, actually, a pretty good chemistry. Bundy's good at kind of working Hogan style, and he's a guy that gets and I've watched so much Bundy on the network, whether it's WWE, WWF, or World Class, or even, I feel like I've watched, and, when he came back in 94, 95, I mean, I feel like I've watched so much Bundy, but quite a bit of Bundy. But he really worked his ass off, even at this point, to be honest. Even at this point, he was still really working hard.
And by the way, real quick, I take that back. We're going to talk about him in February. He's at MSG, so that'll be it.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get into his exit, because his exit's a little controversial, at least from a business standpoint. But it was, he really knew how to work with Hogan, and it really ended up being a very good match. And he was one of, if you go through Hogan's, run those 4 years as champion, that was honestly his, one of his best opponents, I have to say. If you want to list Hogan's, some of Hogan's best opponents, I don't want to say it's ridiculously far-fetched, but, Bundy really worked well with Hogan, particularly in the TV matches. And, put over when it needed to be so on the big stage. Andre's just tremendous. We'll get to the Andre stuff in a sec. But I like how how Bobby kind of took a back seat to really hammer the Andre stuff home. But a good match. Jesse did kind of make himself look like a boob, which is very un-Jesse-like, Peter. But the match overall is pretty good. Again, another good effort. Another good effort by Hogan, but again, in particular, another great effort by Bundy.
Jesse makes up for that whole cockamamie conspiracy theory nonsense there when he accuses when they cart out the referee on the stretcher and he accuses Vince of that looks like you after one of your St. Paddy's Day binges, McMahon. Like, I can't imagine Vince McMahon being carried out of somewhere drunk. Hogan tying himself to Ronald Reagan was really interesting. Yeah. The two creatures of the 80s. Reagan's approval, by the way, was 51% at the time, so not as high as you'd think, but still all right. The one thing listening to the last Saturday Night's Main Event that you did with Chad Campbell that I was disappointed in, and I was hoping you guys were going to talk about it in the Hogan-Bundy match, because I don't think you noticed it. Bundy has now found his knee pad that went missing at the last Saturday Night's Main Event. So I'm glad that he's got two knee pads on there. I like the spot they did where I always like when they do the referee when he barely gets out of the way of being bumped, and then he gets squashed right afterwards anyway. And that ref, the kind of swarthy-looking ref there, Jack Kruger, I think is his name. He does look like a total asshole, and you're gonna see him at WrestleMania 4. And
yeah, he's the guy with the dark eyebrows, right, and the crazy hair.
Yep.
Yeah, he was a fucking animal, that guy.
He was a jobber who got put into retirement by Kamala on a TV, and he got to do an inset promo afterwards, which I thought was amazing. Wow. for a job guy. The joy of this, I mean, this is not the best Hogan Bundy match. I think it is not as good as the last one. Just seeing Andre really come into his own as a heel, because he seemed really tentative around the time of Mania 3. I mean, you guys remember he's in the cart with Heenan and he's waving to the crowd like he's like he's a member of the royal family in a parade or something. Like he looked like a baby face. And I think it's because he had been a baby face and a hero for so long that I'm not sure he knew what to do, really, at least in the United States. And he's working ringside and the referee so well. He's almost like a basketball coach, like trying to get, like, you know, favoritism for Bundy in some way. Like he's just doing a magnificent job there. As I said, the foot touching Hogan thing, that was complete cockamamie crap. I think the Hulk up was really quick because Bundy had dinner reservations at Morton's in D.C. and he just wanted to get there in time. And that post-match, and when Andre sneaks up and chokes Hogan, it's such a magnificent visual. I mean, even though you'd probably think, well, why doesn't he do a rear naked choke? Well, his hands are so big that the move works because you get to see how big his hands are around Hogan's neck. And this was the fuel for my nightmares as an 8- and a 9-year-old because I firmly believed that a 7-foot, 500-pound guy was going to come into my room and choke me as he did Andre the Giant to Hogan. And I did like the Andre versus the Bulldogs handicap match.
it might be the match of the night
so far. Makes Andre look like a total beast there. And then you get Duggan as one of the 800 baby faces coming in for the save. And I don't know if that's a sign of things to come, but breaking the 2x4 over Andre. So one of the better post-match angles. I mean, well, maybe not as good as Savage and Honky, but still pretty damn good. And I'm going to give it 2 full stars, mainly for the post-match.
All right, there you go. So we will hold off talking about Bundy. Well, Peter, if you want to give any quick thoughts about this Bundy run, since you won't be with us in February, any?
I had made a note saying he does randomly show up at MSG in February, and that's one hell of a team that he's a part of.
Yes, it is.
There, I really respect the fact that Bundy was just able to kind of walk away, and then you know he eventually comes back after a while because you know. They always come back. You hear that, CM Punk? They always come back. But, you know, the fact that he just left and then went off and did his own thing, I thought that was great. He was great on Married with Children also.
Yes, he was.
That's true.
Fitting well. All right, so we'll talk more about Boom Boom when we get to February, Scott.
Yes. Yep.
All right, Jesse is back backstage with Jimmy Hart and Greg Valentine yucking it up about their match tonight. Jesse asks how the two men are getting along, and Hammer says this is the happiest he's ever been. Which made me laugh. I always laugh when these guys say that. He's never been so happy in his life than he is right now with Jimmy Hart backstage at Sunday's Main Event. Literally the happiest he's ever been. And says it's better than relying on Brutus Fruitcake. Gene's then with Scott's boy, number 63, Coco Beware, who calls Hammer a featherweight and is ready to take a win after getting some advice from Brutus Beefcake. And that does lead us to our final match of the evening, Coco Beware, taking on Greg the Hammer Valentine. Interesting match here as Hammer's reestablishing himself as a solo act. Coco trying to get on track too. Jesse says Coco's a cross between Buckwheat and Kingfish from Amos and Andy as the Birdman
God.
Really just laying it in. Vince thinks Coco can win if he wrestles as well as he sings, but Jesse disagrees. Vince does put over how well Hart has done with the Hammer, getting him back on track. Coco hits a quick... I like how there's totally shitting all over the new Dream Team. Like, just every 2 minutes is like, really trying to get Hammer back on track. After that
and
awful...
Valiant, too.
After the awful somewhat. 8 months. Yeah, is Valiant gone? He's done, right?
Yeah, he's gone at Survivor Series, I think. Yeah. It's the last shot.
Coco hits a quick flurry. Hammer cuts him down with a hot shot. Hammers away and gets him near falls. Coco battles back in, but Hammer chops away and powers to the corner. Hammer lays in stiff kicks and boots and goes to a chin lock as Jimmy taunts Coco. Hammer pitches Coco outside, and then when the Birdman returns, the Hammer batters him and goes for pin covers. Beefcake eventually saunters out, allowing Coco to come back and grab near falls on roll-ups. Hammer slides outside and jaws at Beefcake, who the referee throws out. After a break, Beefcake is gone, and Hammer's laying in strikes and mixing in some offense, going for pins. Hammer eventually goes up top, but Coco meets him off with a slam and then heats up with a flurry, capped by a dropkick. Coco hits a fist off the middle rope, but Hammer catches him with a shinbreaker, gets the figure four for the win. Hammer puts on the figure four again after the match, drawing Beefer out to break up the hold and chase him off. Beefcake corners Jimmy Hart, takes a few snips of hair off the top of his head, and that's that. Gallant effort by Coco here. Good solid win for Hammer. The match is just okay. Very simplistic. Not a lot of heat. And the Beefcake stuff I thought was good enough to keep their issue burning. So I went a star and a half here, Peter.
You know, when I watch these shows on the WWE Network and you get that little warning at the beginning that says it does not represent the WWE's corporate views, it's always a fun game to figure out, all right, what's the one line in this? Because clearly this is a Saturday Night's main event. Nobody did a five-alarm blade job or anything like that. So what happened? Who said something racist? And yes, it's Jesse with his buckwheat, Amos, and Andy. I mean, going for the twofer there, like double right. racism.
You think he just kept going back and forth on like which one? And he said, fuck it, let's do both.
Yeah, I'm getting them both in, yeah.
He's like Tommy Dreamer, I'll take them both. Which racist joke do you want, Jesse? I'll take them both.
I'll take them both.
And once again, though, Jesse makes up for it. When Vince just gets mad that Jimmy is on the megaphone, he's being very loud, and he says, I wish he'd shove that megaphone down Jimmy Hart's throat. And Jesse just deadpans, geez, you're a violent man. Coco is wearing his World Wildlife Fund tights. It always made me laugh when he would have WWF on his tights. Like, you think you're going to get a push just because you advertised the name of the promotion on there? Wasn't going to happen. I thought it was weird that Beefcake had that interlude, but then I remembered, oh yeah, that Valentine feud didn't really start until now, even though the team broke up about a year before. So at least they're getting back to the business of reestablishing Valentine in some right. way, albeit it's at the expense of Coco, who doesn't get to do any cool stuff in this match. Like, he doesn't even get really good hope spots or anything like that. And Valentine wrestled a smart match there at the end by bailing out when Beefcake comes in with his just unbelievably reckless hedge clipper to the top of the head. What the hell was with that spot?
At least, like, he didn't just stab him in the top of the head with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I was legitimately afraid for Jimmy Hart, and that's not the emotion you want to put, you know, when you're watching this show, because I have a deep commitment to kayfabe. I'll hate Jimmy Hart for this, but don't stab him with like lawn shears. I mean, come on.
What
the hell?
So it's interesting
murder does
too,
not represent
because
WWE's corporate culture.
Yes,
it's interesting too because they obviously they're trying to have, you know, Valentine get reestablished with Jimmy, do the Dream Team blow off that they didn't really do, but they also kind of end up using this as a transition, right? In a way, like, Hammer kind of gets – he's really just in there to get Beefcake into Jimmy Hart, pretty much.
How many times did Jimmy Hart get, like, some hair cut by
Beefcake? I know, right? It's like a couple strands.
Like three or four times. I mean, you're going to get to talk about it again, I think, at some point.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Most likely. Nationally, and I'm sure he'll get – there'll be an MSG snip at some point probably too. I give this a star and a half, I think. Let me see. Yep, star and a half.
I gave it a star and a half also. So.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, I love watching Greg Valentine wrestle anyway. And again, it was more to further the storyline. Very strange show. We had no Savage. Obviously, he was off. He was off air. He was in the dark match. He was not on camera. We had the big Hogan. I mean, really, this night we had to focus solely on the Hogan-Andre stuff. That was really the focal point. Everything else was – it was time to give – to kind of have Savage be sort of in the back burner a little bit, so it was good not to have him on. But not a bad close. And, you know, Valentine, solid as always. Coco, solid as always. And Jimmy Hart playing his role to the hilt, and I guess with Valiant gone – the other heel managers will have to kind of step their game up. But, I mean, we do have Slick there to kind of replace both Valiant and, obviously, Freddie Blassie. So, yeah, just a good overall finish to the show. And we get some final interviews, JR, before we head out the door.
Yeah, Vince and Jesse take us through footage of Andre's attack from earlier. Gene is with Andre and Bobby, and Andre says it felt good to choke out Hulk, and he wants to do it again soon. Gene's with Jesse, who's gleeful about Andre choking out Hogan. Gene tells us that Hulk is recuperating from the injuries, and doctors were worried about potential major surgery. He's struggling to breathe, and Jesse, of course, is digging each and every moment of it. And that is indeed the end of our Saturday Night's Main Event. And that means, gentlemen, it's time for some awards.
Awards.
So we'll open up with our match of the night. Not a lot of choices here on this evening. Rather weak Sinus Man event. I went with Hogan Bundy. I think it's fairly obvious.
Yeah, pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, Hogan Bundy.
All right. Our cousin Junior, the worst match of the night. I went with poor Jake Roberts versus Sika.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Jake and Sika, yeah.
All right. The Hogan Award, MVP of the evening on this night. I went with Andre the Giant. I thought he had the best presence. I loved the post-match attack. I loved the post-show promo. Everything about Andre. He's just been awesome during this whole run.
Yes, I concur. Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah, I'm also voting Andre here, and I'm glad you brought up that closing promo because I wrote that he's practically aroused in that promo. Like, he's almost, like, getting himself off. I'm like, go to the back and fire one off, big man. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you think his hand fits? I don't even know. So,
God.
I've always known, like, Andre's great. But I never really watched, like, this whole year in full like this. And, like, it really gives you an appreciation for how great of a heel he was during the stretch. I mean, he has been on fire. Like, at MSG since he came back from the injury. Survivor Series, he was awesome. Here, he was awesome. Like, he's just been so good in this role.
He's really come into his own. And what's kind of weird about this show and kind of points to the whole NBC Saturday Night's Main Event is its own universe, is how there's no mention of a certain million-dollar man that is kind of going on in the background. I forget the exact timing of the TV, but they're starting to become associated in January of 1988, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, they definitely, it is such its own universe. It's pretty crazy. Like, I do like the way they hype things for the next show, but you're right. It's like it doesn't exist anywhere else but on NBC once a month. It's kind of unique the way they do it. But anyway, all right.
Yeah, I think the Superstars the following Saturday. I was watching, and I think that particular person kind of starts to get that storyline going.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, because it was in December when he tried to buy the title, right? Like, we had already seen that, I think.
Yeah, and he mentions it again. He mentioned some other scheme the following Saturday on Superstars. So
scheme G.
The plans continue. So.
All right, our Uncle Elmer Award for the biggest slob of the night. I went with Boris Zhukov.
Yeah, he's terrible.
Nah, I'm going to go with Sika, actually, because Boris at least has the hat. And Sika,
the hat has work rate.
And Sika, well, Fuji's hat had work rate, that was for sure. So
yeah, that is true. He did. Yeah. Fuji's hat sold.
Sika did, even if Sika had a hat, he still wouldn't have had the best hat in his group. Although Sika had a fun NBC corporate logo. You know how they would put up the little logos for the guys? It's just him with, like, that giant mane of hair. It's actually kind of fun. It's a shame we don't see him on any more Saturday Night's Main Event, I don't think.
By the way, the Bolsheviks, yeah, that snarl that Zhukov has is a tremendous cartoon graphic. The Zhukov snarl. It's outstanding.
He is fucking terrible, though. He is bad. I mean, he makes when Nikolai's the better worker of the team, you know you're in fucking trouble at this point. Yeah. So it's the P&P connection. Last month, Peter went Sika, and we went against it. And this month, Pete goes Sika. All right, best moment of the show. I went with Andre's post-match attack on Hogan.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that whole thing was just magnificent, from him choking Hogan all the way to, like, the babyface locker room just emptying out, trying to pull him off and mostly failing.
And it really sets up what's to come over the next couple of months, so it was well done.
Absolutely.
And that feud is not getting old. Like, taking the whole year off in 87 pretty much from March to November, like, helped it a ton because it still feels real fresh. Like, I don't think anyone's really done with it, you know?
At least No, absolutely not.
And they really, whether it was great foresight or what, I don't know, but that false finish at 3 has just fueled all this because it gave Andre an instant bitch to keep the feud going. So that was well done, too. All right. Last up is our Morocco Award for the most juiced up guy in the evening. And I didn't see you.
No.
He's not the most mustarded up guy. But actually, wasn't a lot of competition for once, which is rare on one of these shows. But I went with Hogan. I thought he was clearly the biggest.
Yes. Yeah. He was definitely looking pretty. And he actually looked like he was, for the first time, it seemed like some of his bloat, as much as he still looked like ridiculously huge, it seemed like a lot of the bloat was not there on this evening. It seemed like he was a little trimmer, obviously. The right. bloat would return, but he seemed not as bloated as he normally is. I don't know, Peter.
Well, seeing as though I couldn't really see how jacked Vince was under all his tuxedo stuff, I'll have to go with Hogan again.
Yes. Or the lack of jack that Jesse became. He must have definitely cycled off. He was.
Yeah,
he was
I don't know what was up with like all the body hair and stuff. Come on, Jesse. Let's take care of that. God.
Is he unitard?
Right. Clean yourself up. It's fucking NBC. All right. So, final grade time. Peter, last time you were here, we did the October 3rd Saturday Night's Main Event. We went pretty high, 7.5, 7.8. This one, not so much. So I had originally had it as a 4, but I don't know. Looking back and talking about it, I'm dropping it a half a point. So I'm going 3.5. I think it's one of the worst Saturday Night's Main Events we've seen. Hogan Bundy was the best segment, but even that, just, you know, I really liked the November match, and even though I gave it the same grade, this one just felt like more disappointing for whatever reason. And that was about it. Like, Andre was great, but the rest of the matches all kind of were pointless and nothing else going on. So kind of hit a little doldrum stretch here. The December House show, not so great. This show, not so great. We'll see if we continue on. Scott, what'd you have for a grade?
I gave it a 4. I thought the title match was solid enough to kind of carry things. I thought the tag match was solid enough. The crowd was really hot. The Andre beatdown was great.
I think my expectations for Saturday's Main Event, though, have been, you know, heightened.
Yes.
Because there's so many good ones that we've watched. Like, it feels real disappointing when we get a show like this for these. So that was kind of a letdown. Look at the one from last year. You know, it was great from January. It was the Orndorff Hogan match. So, like, it definitely feels like a step back.
No, it's definitely a step back. Definitely a step back. Yeah, Peter, 4 for me. The main event was not – the world title match was nice. The Andre beatdown was nice, but everything else seemed kind of flat.
Well, I gave it a 4 also, and I was tempted to go 4.5 just for the certain comedic elements that you're only going to get on the National Broadcasting Company back at the – because, like I said, it's its own universe apart from almost all other storylines. But, yeah, this one was kind of a turd, you know, mostly. I mean, you had the Hogan-Bundy stuff and then the Andre, you know, choking out Hogan. But other than that, it was kind of like a blah version of Superstars or something. It just wasn't very good at all, my opinion. And I really hate to say that because I love Saturday Night's Main Event as a concept. So, oh well.
All right.
Very rare. Yeah, very rare.
That'll do it. Another episode in the books. Always a good time talking to Saturday Night's Main Event. So we'll be back, Scott, in 2 weeks' time. I know we just had 3 weeks off, and then we're going to take another 2 off, but... Yes. Busy time of year. So, of course, I will be trekking down to New Orleans for Mania on Thursday. And then Monday, obviously, we won't be back yet since we're driving. So I'll be back Tuesday morning. So we're going to take next week off. We'll be back April 16th. John D'Amato will be back in the house looking at the 1988 Rumble Royale, as some were saying in the buildup on primetime. Yes. And then the week after that, we'll be looking at the January 88 MSG. So that's what's to come. If you've been out of the loop, we have started the next project here, PlayStation.com. It is the greatest Dirty F tag team all-time project, top 100 tag teams. The nomination process is ongoing. The comments and discussion have begun. You can join our Facebook group if you want to get in on that, or you can get access to the Google Doc, which has all the information. We'll get that up on PlayStation.com soon as well. Be sure to join us, though. The conversation and discussion on Facebook is some of the best part of this whole project. And you learn lots of cool stuff. You get some links to matches you may not have seen. And you can start compiling your list. Hopefully some of us will learn from our mistakes last time around. And, you know, adjust our criteria accordingly. And Peter, from what I understand, are you actually going to participate in this one after being angry that you missed out last one?
Yeah, I am all set to go on this one because in the discussion so far, I think the only thing that I've said is, hey, are the Conquistadors nominated? Because I want to vote for the Conquistadors just for Survivor Series 88, only to pay tribute to that whole match. But yes, I'm very excited for this. It's going to be an interesting process watching a lot of tag team wrestling over the next many weeks and months going forward. Mm-hmm. To narrow this down and to try and be fair to some of the more modern teams is going to be a nice challenge for me.
There you go. Well, you got about 8 months, so just start doing some research. So there you go. Be sure to check on that. Like I said, too, if you are going to be in New Orleans this weekend, reach out. Get you involved in the pre-show meetup. It's going to be a great time. Can't wait. Scott, what do you got coming up this week? Anything?
Of course. We have our annual main event WrestleMania preview this Wednesday. Myself, of course, the Godfather, Nate Milton, and a cast of characters will preview everything. Hall of Fame, TakeOver, and, of course, your big show on Sunday. So, Mr. Winston, we may have to chat offline, sir. There could be a chair for you at the table if you're interested. Yeah, so big show this week, main event, episode 98, I think. And, yeah, we'll preview everything in New Orleans for the weekend. So stay tuned for that. Probably drop on Wednesday.
All right, I will point you to as well, Aaron and I, even though we're onto the tag teams, Aaron and I, as well as you and Nate, still dropping our thoughts on our singles list. So you and Nate have released a bunch. Aaron and I just did our part six over the weekend, so that's up on this very feed, Place of Nation Wrestling feed. PlayStation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, check all those out. Of course, Pro Wrestling Only feed is where you can find Greetings from Allentown. Peter, anything you want to discuss regarding that show?
Yes, my last episode was on Superstars from March 10th, 1990, discussing the Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan build to the Ultimate Challenge, where I had some very pointed things to say about the Ultimate Warrior on that show. And my next show on Thursday, which, by the way, I haven't even started recording yet. I'm just going to roll right into that from this. It'll be the first Monday Night Raw that I've covered be from March 8th, 1993, featuring a Rick Martel versus Mr. Perfect match in the main event. Mm-hmm. It's got a Mega Maniacs promo, so it kind of covers all the touchstones leading up to WrestleMania 9. Also, this week I have a sort of WrestleMania from 1 to 14 podcast coming out with Steve Bennett and of the Sportscasters podcast. We've tentatively called our podcast name the Adams Division, so calling back to our wish for having NHL divisions be under the old name, he being a Sabres fan and me being a Bruins fan, it made a lot of sense to call it that. And I may have a podcast surprise coming up soon because I wanted to come out with you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to be out with it right now.
Breaking news. Should I play the breaking news alert sound?
Yes, please do.
If you want. Well, yesterday was what? April Fool's Day. So a lot of people like to do a lot of weird stuff. Just do silly stuff, people. Don't be like, oh, you know, blah, 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 and try to fool people. I was going to try to release a podcast called From Television City, you know, in homage to the thing that I play at the top of my show, where I was just going to narrate a Brady Bunch episode from start to finish. But you're not going to believe this. Okay, when you go onto Amazon Prime, it's like they want you to pay $10 a month to sign up for CBS All Access to watch, like, old CBS shows. So maybe that'll happen someday where I'll look at the episode where Marcia gets hit in the nose by a football. But fortunately, it's not going to happen on April 1st.
You should call that show with Bennett Cold Take and Shit Take.
Aww. Now, why you got to be like that?
Anyway, check that out. It'll be a good one. WrestleMania is 1 through 14 with Steve and what's your name? Peter. Be sure to check that out. And, of course, check out the newest Greetings from Allentown. I am done. Greetings from Allentown. That March 93 Raw is an interesting one. Scott and I review. By the way, I'm good never watching the 93 Raws again. I've seen them way too many times.
No, absolutely not.
Really?
Oh, my God. I've seen them so many times.
Because I'm going into this, and as I said, I haven't recorded anything, but part of my goal here is to be fair to Rob Bartlett.
No, so
because they're good. I don't like him, but I want to be fair.
He's fine. I mean, they're good watches. But I've just seen them, like, I'm just done watching and talking about them. Like, I've just sat through them now a bunch of times. Like, we did it for our live watch party here at Place to Be podcast. We did our interval refresh written ones. Like, we've just done, like, a bunch on that. And I'm good not watching them again for a long, long time. But that perfect Martel match, do you know the quirk in that match? I won't spoil it for you. Okay.
I actually covered there was a match that I did on an earlier episode that it didn't end the exact same way. Instead, what they did was it was a wrestling challenge, and then they ran out of time at the end. They're like, tune in next week to see the finale of this Tatanka and the Smoking Guns taking on Bam Bam and the Head Shrinkers. Like, Oh, that, like, you have no idea how terrible that works for a show like mine where I don't go in sequential order.
Right. Someday. Like, in 6 years, I get back to that match.
Then I had to actually watch, like, the next wrestling challenge from July of 93 to find that out. They seem to be fond of that in 93. And luckily, they didn't do that much after that. You know, we'll keep the tape machines rolling and all that.
Rolling. I get why they did it for Raw, because I think they were trying to establish it was live and anything can happen. So, like, I get why they did it there.
It's cool, though, that it's two former AWA champions when that was actually a thing, when that actually meant something. Although Henning is pretty much kind of, you know, towards the end of that.
Yeah. All right. That's it. We're out. Talk to you in 2 weeks. Everyone enjoy WrestleMania weekend. Of course, tons going on. Whether you're there or not, it's always a great time in the wrestling world. And then you can settle in for the 11-month doldrum until we fire back up next spring when things get interesting again. But until then, that's Scott. That's Peter. I'm Justin. We're out. Reach out. We'll see you in New Orleans. Everyone else, take care. 2 weeks.